This is Sharon Lockhart with Amy Bell, and we're going to do a little bit of a discussion about the election and how women are going to be impacted. Today's host is going to be Molly Postlewaite with her guests, which she will be introducing a little later. Amy, what do you think about this past Tuesday's election results?
Well, I would definitely say that they are not what a lot of the people that I've been talking to were expecting. It seemed like in Kansas in particular that people were expecting a little bit more of a recoil to Sam Brownback and his policies. And for one reason or another, that just didn't take place.
They talk about the voter turnout. I saw something about 49% turnout. I'm not sure if that was correct or not. But again, I did hear that women and young people were being blamed for the lack of voter turnout. As usual, blame everything on women.
Yeah, I know that I saw lower numbers in my district than in the previous House district race in Kansas, so I can't imagine that we had fairly good turnout numbers across the board, because it did seem rather low turnout, at least in my district.
There's an old saying out there that we get the government we deserve. I guess if we aren't willing to vote in midterm elections, we're going to see this kind of a result over and over and over again. And I talked to a young man who was working in my yard the other day, 20 years old. I asked him if he voted. No, he says, I don't pay any attention to it. I can't make a difference, and I'm too busy working all the time. And
those are the people who would be benefiting the most from paying attention and refusing to elect corporate government and governments that would work for the people themselves. And I know we talked a lot before the election about trying to generate voter turnout and how difficult it was to get people to come out to the polls. You know, I think part of it might be, too, that there was kind of this idea that we were going to count on everybody being really annoyed at Sam Brownback rather than building up what the alternative plan was. And I think it was a very resounding endorsement for the idea that you cannot just run on not liking the other guy's plan.
It did seem like no one was willing to step forward and say what they would do. It was just that we're not going to do what the other guy's done. And there were really no platform, no values expressed
as to
why somebody would want to vote for you.
Yeah, Brownback did stand on this idea that he had a roadmap for Kansas, and that roadmap is something that is written down and can be found on the on his website. I mean, it's very out there. He hasn't tried to hide what he was going to do with Kansas, and the opposition kind of just said, well, we're not going to do that. And the issue is that not doing that, what Brownback had set up for the roadmap, is slashing taxes. And for people who have more progressive viewpoints, the slashing of taxes has gone too far. The education system is suffering, public services are suffering, and yet they were so afraid to say, no, we actually need taxes, and we need them for this and this and this, and, you know, we want to have our students educated, and we have to be able to pay for it, and that means we have to pay the taxes for it, and we want our police departments funded, and we want our fire departments funded. I had a neighbor that was a social worker who was a caseworker for sex offenders who were on parole, and she had seen her workload triple. She'd been furloughed. She hadn't had a raise in like 3 or 4 years, and I'm just going, why would you work someone to the bone who was performing such a vital service as keeping an eye on known predators in our community?
It is amazing how adverse how negative people perceive taxes. And of course, we do need services. We can't survive in a society that we pay no taxes in and have no roads, no education, no benefits. It just doesn't compute.
Well, and it is to a point where saying we need taxes is political suicide. And I have to wonder if there is not a larger problem of public awareness of what the function of government is and what they need it to be, how it helps them, how it affects them. I think a lot of people only see the effect on their pocketbook when they see their taxes come out every April, and they're not seeing the sex offender down the street who is being watched on behalf of them and their family. They're not seeing that, you know, they might have some sort of disaster, hopefully not, that they need emergency services, and they're not seeing until they need those emergency services that the budgets for them have been drastically cut and they might not be getting the service that they had anticipated.
Or until their house burns down and the fire department is an hour in getting there. That's a gross exaggeration probably, but you know, it's called socialized services. And everybody's so appalled by the term socialized, for example, medicine, which is essentially like a Medicare for everyone. It would work so well, but of course it has to be paid for somehow.
Well, and I'll say too that we have alone a lot of activist groups and special interest groups, and you know, it seems like they've got their work cut out for them and they need to be doing a more thorough job if they expect the outcome that they were very much anticipating, and they would come on this show and kind of talk as though the outcome of this election was going to be differently. So this big surprise is kind of what, to me, is worth talking about, was the fact that no one seemed to believe that they were going to have the results that happened.
It was close. It was close. It wasn't exactly what you would call a mandate.
Well, it wasn't, but it wasn't that close. It, especially when polls were showing several points lead. I know for the Grey Gorman, Pat Roberts, Grey Gorman was shown 10 points in the lead, and he got creamed. Compared to 10 points in the lead, he really did get creamed. And so I wonder, what's the validity of these polls?
Or do we wonder about our voting machines? Has anyone questioned that? You know, it wasn't so many years ago that the voting in various states was called into question. Florida, Wisconsin, and who owns the voting machines? Just saying, just a thought.
Yeah. Well, I know that in Johnson County, that the Johnson County Election Board, they do not have an internet that their computers are checked to. Each individual computer gets a paper printout. And they take that paper printout and they count that paper printout. So there is more paper trail than digital trail in Johnson County elections. Now, I'm not sure if that's something that every voting machine is supposed to do, but I'm fairly confident in the voting machines, at least in the Johnson County side. But, you know, I also didn't design them. I don't. There might be some really special backdoor, I don't know, but there's nothing that I've seen that makes me worry about that in my neighborhood. Now, what's going on other places, I don't know.
Well, we did get 100 women into the U.S. House and Senate, which is a first. So that could be considered a plus. And then we've gotten 3 women in the Missouri House and Senate, which is pretty new. Pretty astounding in the St. Louis area.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that we are starting to see a little bit more of a trend towards women, but we're celebrating this like, oh, we hit a new milestone. There's a whole bunch more women. It's still a ridiculously small percentage compared to the population, which is 50-50.
Very good point, Amy. We'll keep working on that.
nothing less than 50-50 participation is what our mission statement says, and I really think celebrating like 25% is just a little bit premature. We should be doing better.
And I think it's more like 20% at 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, not even 25. What, 33% is critical mass, so we've got a ways to go.
Yeah, no, I don't think that it's quite time to celebrate women being a force politically in this country. I think that we still have a really long way to go. And, you know, I'm not even going to get into the part where a lot of these women are not voting for women's freedom and rights. They're voting for the more patriarchal standard that we've been living under. But that is their prerogative. I do stand for their right to be a fan of patriarchy and vote that way. I mean, they are women. They have the right to make that decision. But it's certainly nothing I'm going to celebrate.
Good, very good point, Amy. And now should we turn it over to Beth and Molly?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much, Sharon and Amy. And again, I am Beth Pike, sitting in for them. And joining me today in the studio is Molly Postlewaite and also our attorney, Earlene Kriegel. Welcome, ladies. How are you doing today?
I'm super. And thank you, Beth, for doing the engineering board. I'm thrilled to be able to work with you.
Thank you.
And hi.
Welcome.
This is Earlene Kriegel, and I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah. And I have to say a big thank you to Earlene for coming down. We happened to run into each other yesterday and confirming that she would be our guest, and I'm so glad that you could come on Every Woman. I've been coming down to KKFI for a good many years now, and one of the things I love about doing the Every Woman show is I get to introduce really cool, interesting women to the Kansas City area. And I have a really cool, interesting woman here today, Earlene Kriegel. And for full disclosure, I will say that my daughter, who is also an attorney, works with Earlene, and that's how our paths have crossed. So Earlene is going to share with us some of the things she has learned on her journey as an attorney. And so maybe tell us a little bit of your background and where you're from, Earlene.
Well, born and raised in Kansas City, went away to college, but came back to law school at UMKC Law School, which is an absolutely wonderful law school. I've been practicing for 35 years and have been fortunate to practice with my husband, Sandy Kriegel. Our firm now has 12 lawyers, and I'm proud to say we have 8 women and 4 men, so that's a very unusual composition for a law firm, as you will find if you look at compositions of law firms that usually it's more men than women, so we're a little bit unusual in that regard. And in my path as an attorney, I have found that I have concentrated in the area of bankruptcy. And in that capacity, I've been an attorney for individuals who file bankruptcy, for companies that need to file bankruptcy and reorganize, as well as I'm a Chapter 7 trustee, and so I'm appointed through the court system to help liquidate assets to try and raise money to pay the debts in a particular case. So,
and early, were you one of the first women trustees?
Yes. So I was appointed about 26 years ago, and I was the first woman trustee in the Western District of Missouri, western half of the state. And now we have 3 women who are on our panel and in the Kansas City area. But yes, I felt like I forged the path.
That's a big deal.
It was then. And the history is that when I graduated law school in 1979, 50% of the class was female, but the reality was when we graduated, there were very few, if any, law firms that would hire women as attorneys for the firm. And so the women in my class were relegated to either finding government jobs or going to work for themselves or something of that type, but really only one or two of the women in our class were able to get jobs with large firms. So it was quite a unique situation, which is totally different than today. Today we not only have women at all the large firms, but we have women as judges. We didn't have that then. And it's quite a different situation.
Well, I'm curious as to when you decided you wanted to go into the field of law. Were you in high school, or when did you make that discovery? That because it's a pretty intense field to go into and quite a lot of education.
Well, when I was in college, my degree was in political science, and I sought out courses that were related to law, whether it was constitutional law, international law, something of that order. So I really enjoyed the legal aspect. When I graduated law school, I had read an article that they were just starting programs dealing with what were then called paralegals or legal assistants. And so I decided, well, I could do that. And the traditional role was really to be a secretary. So I decided, well, I didn't want to be a secretary, so I would look for something different. And I convinced a law firm in Tucson to hire me. And so I was the first paralegal in Tucson, and kind of created that path, worked there for several years, and then came back to Kansas City and enrolled in law school. And that's how I ended up in the legal profession.
And did you meet Sandy, your husband, while you were in law school?
Yes, he had already started practicing, and we met while I was in law school. So when I graduated, we joined together and started our firm.
And so you have, like you said, kind of forged the way for women, and also you're a working mom. You raised kids while you were practicing law.
We did, and we have two children who are grown, and our son is also a lawyer, but unfortunately not in Kansas City, and our daughter works in other aspects not related to law, and she's in Colorado. So unfortunately we don't have our children here, but we have a lot of great people at our firm, and the thing that I find really rewarding for me is that we have four young women who are working in our firm, who are attorneys, and I truly enjoy the mentoring aspect and working with them and trying to not only excite them into enjoying the legal profession, but helping to teach them how to handle clients, how to work with clients, to encourage them in their law.
And did you have mentors?
I would say I did. I worked for a former judge in Arizona, and so when I was a legal assistant, I felt he was a good mentor. And ironically, he went to law school here at UMKC. My husband, I would say, is my other mentor.
Well, and I think it's a really good point that, you know, mentoring is so important. I have so many wonderful mentors, men and women alike, who guided me and inspired me. And I try to do the same as well, to be a mentor, and it doesn't really matter, you know, the gender. But it is really great, I think, when a seasoned woman can kind of help some gals who are getting into a new career, and, you know, just being there to listen. What would you say, Earlene, as far as, you know, fashions have changed drastically over the 30-year period. Did you worry about what you looked? Because I'm just thinking about when I got out of college, one of the things was like you had to have a power suit.
And the three-piece power suit.
Yes, yes. And, and I have to just say, I've seen some of the way some of the attorneys dress out, and they dress so cute and fashionable, and it doesn't seem like they're so...
It's a lot more casual.
Yeah, and they're just... It seems like they don't have to have that three-piece suit.
Power suit going on.
Well, and so when I graduated, I felt that, and I think other women did, that you had to dress extremely professional. While men might be able to wear something less professional, I felt like if a woman who is an attorney was not dressed as an attorney would be expected to dress, that they would not be viewed as a professional. And so I think it created a little bit of a pressure on women to dress more professionally. So I always wore a suit or a dress, and really it was only until probably the last 10 years that I wore pants. It was really more of a very large effort to always dress professionally for work. And I think, Molly, you and I had talked about before the show a little bit about power and how we would be viewed as women and as attorneys. And I had mentioned that back when I first started practicing, I would appear in Jackson County Circuit Court, and I might be the only woman or maybe one of two or three other women in the courtroom. And I'm short. I'm 4'10", 4'11", and so I was always worried when I would stand up at the podium with a male attorney who was 6'4", and I worried how the judge would view us and whether I would have less credibility because of my size, my stature, and it was a concern back in those days when I first started practicing. But I would have to say that I feel extremely comfortable now, and I don't sense that there's really a concern about that. It's more about what you have to say than how you look or how tall you are.
And doing your homework and making sure that you've got the details that the judge is looking for. And
exactly. That is true.
Okay. Well, ladies, I'll just remind our listeners that we are listening to Every Woman, and the guest today in the studio is Molly Postlewaite and attorney Earlene Kriegel. We are going to stop for just a moment here, do just a short break, and then we'll come back and we'll have some further discussion with you two, all right? It's 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
The Global and Multicultural Center, in partnership with Soka Gakkai International, present Building a Culture of Peace for the Children of the World. The exhibit is for all ages and will be held through November 15th in the Miller-Nichols Library on the UMKC campus. More information can be found by emailing info@kcglobalconcepts.com. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
If you were offended with what the Chiefs did to honor Native Americans this past Sunday, check out Native Spirit this Sunday as Moses Brings Plenty of the Kansas City Indian Center explains what did and didn't happen to host Rhonda Levaldo. Native Spirit, Sunday at 5.
And once again, you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI. Kansas City Community Radio, this is Every Woman, and my guests in the studio today are Molly Postlewaite and attorney Earlene Kriegel. All right, ladies, let's get back to the conversation.
All right, thank you, Beth. Well, you know, Earlene, there are some people who would think about attorneys as maybe not always doing the right thing, or, you know, I'm sure you've heard lots of jokes about being an attorney, but I'm kind of curious as to, you know, how do you, what do you find personally satisfying about being an attorney, and how the laws can help people?
Okay. Well, as I mentioned, my area is the area of bankruptcy, and in that area, when I represent an individual, my role or my job is to help them and move forward in getting what we call a fresh start. And oftentimes people who come in to see us and who have financial problems, whether it's their house is going to be foreclosed, their car is going to be repossessed, they have overwhelming credit card debt, they're worried because they feel that I'm going to judge them or the court's going to judge them and be critical of maybe decisions they've made. And so we try and put people at ease that that's not our role. We're not here to judge. We're here to help and to help people get that fresh start. I joke with my husband that at the conclusion of a case where I've worked with someone for bankruptcy, they usually give me a hug. And he said, none of my clients hug me. How come all of your clients hug you? And I said, well, because I feel like I make them very comfortable, and I take pride in wanting to do a good job so that they can move forward with their lives.
Well, I would think it would just be so intimidating to go into an attorney's office, and you're just kind of bearing your soul, and it would be really, I think, frightening. But so it's a reassuring thing that you look at their situation and advise them on how, like you said, can make a fresh start.
Yes, and it's not always a perfect decision. I mean, sometimes people can't afford to keep the house, or they need to let the car go. I mean, sometimes there isn't something that we can do to really help them, but they at least know what their options are, and they know that if they file bankruptcy and if they have to shed themselves of a debt, such as a house payment that's just too much, they can walk away, they can start over, and hopefully in the future maybe find a house that's more within their financial ability to pay. So we feel like we try to help someone. And again, it isn't always that they get everything they want, but we do the best we can given the circumstances. So as I mentioned, there are five attorneys actually that handle bankruptcy work in our firm, and four women and one man. And but we also do other things that I feel are kind of this feel-good area, and one is in the area of adoptions. And we represent a lot of individuals who want to adopt, and I'm not one of those attorneys, but the interesting part of that area of law is it's changed dramatically over the years. We have a lot of high-tech adoptions now. We have in vitro fertilization. We have surrogates. So we have a lot of different things going on now that we never had before. Before it was a traditional adoption, and now we have step-parent adoptions. We have same-sex couple adoptions. We have lots of different things. And so it's actually an exciting area, and one that our firm does quite a bit of work in. We have attorneys who also help people with wills and trusts, estate planning, as well as corporate and litigation. So we have kind of a well-rounded practice. But our philosophy is that our clients are very important to us, that we want to take good care of them, and things are kept very confidential, so no one has to worry about anything going beyond the office if that's what they choose. So,
yeah, I know adoptions are so in the forefront these days, and I, even with my age group, I had kids of my own and they're grown, but some of my friends are dealing with adoption from Russia and China. I've known couples who've gone to Guatemala, and so there's just so many different options. It is just a fascinating field, and like you said, it's a feel-good thing, but also maybe some tedious work and heart-wrenching decisions. Things probably don't always go the way the couple was hoping. And have you had to work with any family law and divorce and things like that?
Well, our firm does handle family law matters, divorces, that type of thing. I personally stick to the bankruptcy area because that's what I've been doing, and fortunately I've been busy in that area. I would say that filings of bankruptcies are down, but fortunately we still have a good practice and a good following. So the other areas are not mine, and I will leave those to others to really talk about. But as I mentioned, we have eight women in our firm, and those women do quite a bit of taking on things such as adoption work, family law work, as well as estate planning, wills and trusts, that type of thing.
Well, on a personal level, Earlene, I know your kids are grown now, but when they were younger and juggling school and the demands of a family, what were some things that helped you, or do you have any words or pearls of wisdom for women of any field who are, struggling not just with, trying to keep the kiddos in the right place at the right time, but all the demands that we have, not just as a woman, but as a complete family?
Well, I personally think that parents lead by example, and I think if your children see that you are a hard worker, that you are doing something in your profession to help other people, and that you're a good person for whatever it is you might be doing, that will go further to help them to develop and be the kind of person that you would like them to be. And my husband and I, not only being lawyers, but we have always been involved in organization work, and we do that because we think it's needed and it's something that we enjoy, and our children have seen that, and they on their own now have done that type of thing. So our daughter, who's in Colorado, has been a youth friend mentor, and our son in Chicago goes and works with a child once a week with tutoring. So, you know, we're proud of them for kind of carrying on that tradition.
Well, you know, my kids are all grown and out of the house now, but I'm remembering when they were in school and we were all trying to get out the door, you know, there would be piles of laundry and trying to find the socks.
Fighting over the bathroom.
Oh, my goodness. Did you get your homework in your backpack? It was just a flurry. And it was fun. I'm kind of glad it's over now because I had this huge trash bag full of mismatched socks. And I could just remember when we couldn't find socks, we would just start digging through the sock bag.
Well, our kids were fortunate and they were in a great school, so they also had great after-school programming, so my husband and I could work our regular work day, but they had to be picked up by 6 o'clock, and so there was always a rush for one of us to leave the office by 5 o'clock or 5:15 in order to get to where we needed to be by 6 o'clock, and we'd walk in the door at 5 till 6, and they'd look up from what they were doing, and they would say, "Can you come back in a few minutes?" after we had, you know, spent the last 45 minutes rushing to get there.
The frantic moment to get there, and they're like, "Oh, we're not ready to go." Well, they must have had a good place, and that makes you feel so much better.
Absolutely.
Knowing that your kids are not feeling neglected. So it sounds like balance was a real key, that, you know, you put your family obligations, of course, high up there, as well as, you know, your obligations and commitment to your profession.
And it's important not just for us, but again for the people who work in our law firm. And so whether it's staff or whether it's other attorneys, if they have young children and there's a soccer game or a school music program, we want them to go to those things if they're during the day, because we don't want them to miss those opportunities, because we know how important it was for us, and we want them to have that same experience.
Well, that is wonderful as an employer that you see that need, because you just do hear of so many families who feel like, "I can't call in sick because of a penalty at work or the perceived situation at work that would put you on the black list." and you know, little kids are going to get sick, and there's also, you know, those special moments like the football game or the dance recital that, you know, you don't want to miss because you're so tied to your job.
Well, and now, you know, the holidays, you have your holiday programs that'll be coming up, the plays. Those are during the daytime. I know that's hard for people to then get a break from their work. So that would be, you know, a nice thing for them to be able to go to those activities for their children. Absolutely.
So it is. It's very important. And I think there are a lot of companies that actually do recognize that and do a good job in accommodating their staff.
Well, these are points to ponder, I think, because, you know, working moms and working dads are here to stay. And so, you know, I know it's a cliche, but, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. And I have to say, I had so many great friends who I could call and say, you know, could you go help me out or pick my child up, and, you know, I'm running late. And without that network, that support, it would have been so much more difficult.
Absolutely. Having a good support network would make it so much easier.
Well, and I always think of having a job like an attorney, it maybe doesn't end at 6 p.m., that, you know, the kids are fed and maybe ready for bed, and then there's still some work that you have to do.
And I would say that probably more nights than not, after they would be put to bed, I would pull out my briefcase and start working again till late at night. So it was difficult, but it was manageable, and we were just fortunate enough to be able to do it. And, you know, I would say that I really respect single moms who have raised children, because I've been fortunate. I have great spouse, he's a great father, and I had someone to help me in, as you said, having support and raising your kids. But when I see a single mom who can manage everything, I really can't imagine doing that, and I really respect women for that role.
It's commendable. It's very commendable when a woman can do that on her own. But I also like seeing how much more men seem to be getting involved in the upraising of the children and being... Honestly, you agree.
Well, Beth, I have to say, you know, because I work at a park, and it is so fun for me to see these dads coming down the hill with the stroller, and they've got the little ones, one's toddling, one's in a stroller, and the dads are taking the kids for a nature walk. And I've been at the park now for 17 years, and, you know, you should just think of moms coming out for a walk in nature or families on the weekend, and now there's a lot of dads there. And I always try to give those dads a thumbs up and say, you know, you're setting a great role model for teaching, nurturing, and compassion to your kids, and they look like they're having fun too.
Right, they do. I've seen them at the parks as well with the strollers or taking the kids for the walk. And again, you know, you're touched by that because it's a role reversal. And, you know, there's a lot of that going on, I think, where the woman is being more of the financial supporter and possibly dad is taking over the activities and duties at home. Am I incorrect
in
that?
Yes, and I think that is what makes a good marriage or a good union, is that the couple decides how to divide the responsibilities, and sometimes it's a financial job, and sometimes it's a house job, and whatever it might be, just to be able to share and do an equal contribution.
Well, it was 32 years ago that I had my first child, and I made it very clear to my husband that we were both going to change the poopy diapers. And he was in agreement with that, but he had friends who were just like, oh, there's no way I would do that. That's women's work. And I'm just so thankful my husband never felt that way, that, you know, he was like, this is my work. I am the father. I want to help with this. And I know we're getting off subject a little bit, but, he was sometimes like, he far exceeded my expectations as a husband and father, because he did want to share the responsibilities. And if you are working outside the home, I mean, you know, wow, we all have to make it work. And kids as well. My kids did chores because, you know, I wasn't always there. And if we needed the clean dishes, somebody was going to have to do it.
And that helps them in learning responsibility and what it's going to be like then, you know, when they get older and they're on their own. I think that's a great thing that you've got them doing some chores, and they probably don't, but...
Yeah. Well, now they're all gone, and I'm like, why is this house so messy? It's just me and my husband.
But I do think, again, going back to the adage that your children learn from example.
Yeah.
So if... husband and wife are equal in doing the chores around the home, and the kids see that, I think then they recognize that that's normal and that's expected, and they won't think of anything, that anything's amiss if they're asked to participate in that regard.
All right. Well, great. I know we have to have a break here in just a minute.
We do.
So let's maybe go to that, Beth.
Okay.
But we're going to come back after the break and talk about strike a power pose and body language and leadership and confidence and some stuff that we want to share with our audience. And maybe even you might get to do a little bit of movement.
Okay. Well, again, this is Every Woman, and the guests in the studio today are Molly Postlewaite and attorney Earlene Kriegel. I'm Beth Pike. We're going to take just a short break, and we'll be right back. It's 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Richard Mabian speaks to James Turner, president of the Kansas City, Missouri chapter of the Sierra Club, on Eco Radio, Monday at 6 p.m.
Erica Tenowith on why nonviolent civil resistance works on Alternative Radio, Wednesday at 9.
90.1 FM presents Truck Stop Honeymoon, Cowgirls Train Set, and Carswell and Hope at the Lawrence Arts Center. That's November 22nd, 2014, from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Tickets online at kkfi.org/events. November 22nd, Truck Stop Honeymoon, Cowgirls Train Set, and Carswell and Hope at the Lawrence Arts Center. Tickets at kkfi.org/events.
Peaceworks Kansas City invites the community to the annual Unplaza Art Fair at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church, 4501 Walnut. The event will take place on Saturday, September 21st from 10 to 6, and Sunday, the 22nd from noon to 5. Proceeds support the work of Peaceworks Kansas City. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I'm Molly. If you've just joined us, I'm Molly Postlewaite here for Sharon Lockhart and Amy Bell. And our guest is Earlene Kriegel, who is an attorney. And she's been sharing some of her experiences and her journey in her career path. And I wanted to just bring up something that I think is just so fascinating. It's about the concept of a power pose. And I actually heard this on a TED Talk, and I did a little bit more research from a social psychologist, Amy Cuddy. She's an associate professor at Harvard Business School. She introduced the concept of power posing. And this is to boost confidence. And what is a power pose? Essentially, it is one in which you take up as much physical space as possible. So she says, think of a runner crossing the finish line, the first place in the race. She will almost always put her arms up in the air with a big V, the classic victory pose. It doesn't just say, I'm powerful, but it says to the runner herself, you did it. So it's not just talking to other people, it's about talking to yourself. So I thought that was kind of some interesting stuff, and so I just have to ask you, Earlene, do you strike a power pose?
Oh my goodness, I would say that I probably don't. It's interesting because oftentimes new clients will come into the office, and I can tell they're very nervous, and they'll say, I'm intimidated, I'm with a lawyer, and I'll say, well, I'm 4'11", and there's nothing to be intimidated about. But I agree that when you are talking to a group, if you're in court talking to a judge, that you want to be there with a position of power so that you have confidence not only in what you say, but how you say it. And I think then people will take you seriously. I think people will listen more intently to what you have to say. So I think there is something to be said for what you would describe as a power pose.
Well, certainly in being able to read body language with your clients, even though they haven't said a word, you can see that they are feeling nervous and intimidated. And so you picking up on those cues, I think women are usually very attuned to that. And you know, our role sometimes is to be nurturing and make people feel more at ease. So, you know, there's the kind of the low power cues, such as, you know, just nodding and making that person feel comfortable. But then kind of to pep talk ourselves up if we're in an intimidating situation. And I think of like when I have to talk in front of a group of people, I also am petite, but I like to look big, and, you know, I do gesture a lot with my arms. And when I was listening to this TED Talk, one of the things that they recommended was to do the Wonder Woman pose. So, listeners, if you'd like to try this, the Wonder Woman pose, remember Linda Carter from Wonder Woman, she would stand with her feet apart in a straddle, hands on the hips, and strike that pose of something's about to happen. I'm here and, you know, I'm powerful. And so I actually tried that, and it does kind of make you feel strong and empowered. And so some of these things are to kind of, you know, pump you up, if you will. And a couple of the other topics that they addressed in this article was to fake it till you make it. You may not feel confident, but act confident and smile. And smiling kind of releases some of that adrenaline that we have. I have to say, every time I do the radio show, I get a little bit, you know, jazzed up, and I get excited about doing the show. And so my body language and my facial expression help me to deliver my communication. Even though listeners can't see me, I'm hoping they can feel my enthusiasm and my passion for my guest and the topic.
And it does. It comes through. People, yeah, no, they can't see you, but in radio, they can hear the infliction and tell if you are happy, excited, or smiling. Mm-hmm. So it is, again, something that is noticeable. And I love the Wonder Woman pose. That's great.
And empowering yourself also means being prepared. And so if you're giving a presentation, if you're talking to someone, and you're prepared for what you're going to say or how you're going to say it, that really does carry you a long way in having that power and having that confidence in yourself. My husband used to joke. He said if someone was nervous in court, what they should do is imagine the judge and the jury or the other people in the room as being naked. By doing that, maybe you would feel more comfortable.
That might be distracting if you really visualize that. But I love that analogy. Yeah. And it is true, you know, one of the things that I've heard is that, you know, my husband used to say, we all put our pants on the same way. Today we're all wearing pants, and we have that in common. I know we're coming toward, you know, that last part of the show, but I can't not have a conversation with you, Earlene, without asking you if you've seen the movie Legally Blonde.
Oh yes,
I just got the biggest kick out of that movie.
Well, I don't think it's realistic, but yes, it was cute. It was very cute.
Well, I liked it that if you haven't seen the movie, it's about a girl who decides to go to law school because she's trying to get a boyfriend back. But in the process, she discovers her own power. And that's what I liked about it. She was you know, seen as kind of the dumb blonde, but she really was quite brilliant, and she prepared.
That's right.
She worked hard. So in segueing on that, if someone is interested in exploring the field of law, what would you say to them, Earlene? Because I can imagine that some people would say, oh, I'm just not smart enough to do that. Because it is a job that requires a lot of brain work.
Well, I would suggest that if someone's interested in the field of law, they would look into what type of area they would be interested in, whether is it criminal justice, and maybe they wouldn't seek a job that would necessarily be as a lawyer, but there are probation officers, there are court personnel. Maybe they would be interested in going to law school for something other than being a lawyer, and law school, frankly, is a great education that prepares you for a lot of different things, because you learn to be a critical thinker. You learn really how to analyze, and it's really a great education. But unfortunately, because schooling costs a lot of money these days, students don't have the luxury of finding themselves anymore. They do have to really have done their homework and decide what their path is they want to take, and then find the education that fits that path.
Now, do you have? Are you aware of any opportunities for maybe a high school student or a college student to do an internship or some type of way to explore? Because I know that there are some jobs that do accept For instance, I work at a park. We have lots of people who think they want to work at a park because they love animals.
Sure.
And then I always recommend to them to volunteer and find out, you know, do you really want to do this job? Because sometimes they find out, yeah, I don't really want to clean up animal do because that's kind of what I do sometimes because I work with animals. So are there volunteer opportunities?
You know, I really don't know of any specific volunteer opportunities with law firms or lawyers or with the court system, but there are many organizations such as Operation Breakthrough or Midwest Foster Care and Adoption Agency that probably, if you're high school or college age and you want to volunteer and learn about kind of the system dealing with children, whether it's as a foster parent, whether it's potential adoption issues, whether it's dealing with child abuse or in the area of psychology. I mean, mm-hmm. that might be an avenue of where you might look for internship.
Now, what is Operation Breakthrough?
Operation Breakthrough offers everything from daycare for low-income families, food bank and clothing bank and furniture and parenting skills. And so they're an amazing organization run by Sister Berta and Sister Carita.
Oh, okay. I think I do know what you're talking about now. I just didn't realize that was the name of it.
Yes.
Well, and I have a friend who does foster care, and she became an advocate for this young man who was too old for foster care. And I can't remember the term. It was something like a committed adult. And there's lots of ways to kind of explore that, even without, you know, becoming an attorney, that you can help change people's lives.
Well, and we have in Kansas City a lot of organizations such as Synergy House. Because if you can imagine a child who's in foster care and they turn 18 and now they're going to what they call age out of the system, they're no longer supported by the state, but no one's going to pay for college. They don't have resources to go out and rent an apartment and buy furniture. They have to get a job, but maybe they don't have really the skills and they have no one necessarily to mentor them. Who helps take care of these kids? And so that's an area in our city that we really need someone to step up and give some support, not just financially, but time and effort and mentoring. So,
well, and yeah, just the human touch is, it's so important to, I mean, we can do a lot of cool things with technology, but you can't reach out and extend a hand to someone. And I know the foster care, that's another show that we should do, because it's quite a feat to do the foster care. I don't know that I've got it in me, but I admire those people, and I have a friend who does some limited work with the foster care. Well, Earlene, I have enjoyed so much visiting with you, and your position has touched so many lives.
Oh, well, it's been a wonderful experience to be an attorney and to have the opportunity to work with so many great people. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you, and have a great weekend.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, thank you very much.
We'll be back next weekend or next Saturday with Sharon Lockhart and Amy Bell with another fascinating show about every women of Kansas City.
That's right. Thank you, Earlene. Thank you, Molly, for joining us. And if you have any ideas as a, you know, for a guest during our show, make sure that you give us a call and let us know. Or if you've got ideas for show topics, go ahead and put those out on Facebook. It's Every Woman KKFI. And post your ideas for a show or for a guest. So thank you again, ladies. And I ask you, our listeners, to stay tuned. We've got Urban Connections coming up next with Donna Wolf. And after that, it'll be followed by Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City. It's right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.